Well, as I mentioned in the announcements, the feast is less than 2 months away, and it's getting closer every minute. An excitement for the feast is beginning to build as plans start being made, and we start thinking about where we're going and what we're going to do and how we're going to get there and all the different things that goes into the planning of going to the feast. The feast is always a joyous time, as certainly God meant it to be. Because every year we get together, we convene to worship and rejoice before God. We gather together in a place where His name has been placed. Of course, we know that the site is selected by His chosen servants. God doesn't send us an email and tell us where He wants the feast to be. He allows His servants to seek it out. And there's a lot of research that goes into the selection of a feast site. There's a lot of study that goes into the areas. And can they accommodate us? Do they have ample restaurants? Do they have enough establishments where we can stay? Do they have a hall that will suit our needs? And it seems that God always shows us where the best selection is. You know, we pray about it, we fast about it, and we ask God to show us what His will is. And He always does. He always shows us where He wants His name placed. Somewhere during the selection process of a feast site, God will usually make it very obvious where He wants us to be. The feast is a commanded assembly for all members of God's church. It's for everyone. And of course, as we know, the holy days are appointments that we have with God. We have an appointment with God. The Hebrew word is moed, which means an appointment. We have an appointment with God. It is our responsibility to be there to rejoice before Him. When we have an appointment, we are expected to be there. Well, assembling all of God's people in selected regional sites is no small task. There is a lot that goes into it. It is a huge undertaking, and we know that it is not without considerable expense. It's an expense not only for the church to find a place to have the feast, to secure a hall, to secure the facilities that are needed, but it's also a rather sizable expense for the members who attend. You know, we know that going to the feast isn't a cheap thing. It's something that takes money, something that takes a considerable amount of money. Because we are to come to the feast and we're to rejoice before God. We're not supposed to go to the feast and just get by. He wants us to go there and have a wonderful time. And that's part of the plan. That's part of what He designed it to be. It's to be a wonderful time for us. And part of that plan is financing it. And God gave us a way. In His wisdom, He gave us a way that we could finance it. He showed us how we can pay for this expense of going to the feast. He instituted a system of tithing which helps us rejoice in His holy days. Now, the festival tithe is not to be considered as an optional way to pay for our festival expenses. It's not something that's optional. It is a command. It is a command from God, and He tells us to provide this tithe so that we have the ability to rejoice before Him. It is a command. Without the festival tithe, we might just end up going to the feast and taking just what we need to get by. You know, just whatever little amount we can get by on, that's what we would take. Especially in these tight economic times when money might be a little tight for some of us, we might try to just get by on as little as possible. And we might end up limiting ourselves to where we aren't really rejoicing in the way that God wants us to rejoice. Or worse yet, we might find ourselves unable to attend because we don't have any money to spare for the feast. And so that might be a problem for us if we didn't have the command to save a festival tithe. You see, God's law enables the entire church to keep the feast. God's law makes it possible for us to all come to rejoice before Him. That's His command. That was His directive. That is our appointment to come and worship before Him. He expects our careful participation in that plan. Today I'm going to talk to you about the festival tithe. And I realize that some of the material I give you today is going to be somewhat basic for those of you who have been in the church for a long time, and I'm sure you've heard it before. But there may be some things that I say here today that you've never heard or that you've not heard in the same way, because there are some aspects of this tithe that I do want to bring out. For those of you who are new in the church, this is much needed information so that you understand how important it is that we follow this command of God in paying the festival tithe. There are many people in the world who understand the concept of tithing. And there are some who do tithe. There are some people who give 10% of their income to their church. There are some people in this world who don't have a church. They give 10% of their income to some charity. There are people who understand this principle of tithing, not realizing that it is more than a principle, that is actually a law of God. Let's go back to Leviticus chapter 27 and start there. In Leviticus chapter 27, I'd like to read verse 30. In Leviticus 27, verse 30, it says, "And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord." It says that the tithe is holy. The tithe is dedicated for a specific purpose. It is set apart for a reason. God instituted the tithe for a purpose. Everything God does is for a purpose. And His command for us to give the tithe has a purpose. It is holy. The word holy is from the Hebrew word kodesh. And that word means that which belongs to God. The tithe belongs to God. Since it is God's, it is to be used for His purposes, not ours. God expects the tithe to be used for His purposes, and this applies no matter which tithe we're talking about. Whether we're talking about the first tithe, which goes for the work, or we're talking about the festival tithe, which goes for the keeping of God's holy days. The tithe belongs to God. All tithes belong to God. They are holy, and they are set apart for a specific purpose. The first tithe is used for doing the work of preaching the gospel. We read in Genesis how Abraham and Jacob both gave their tithe directly to Melchizedek. One of those we've covered in the Bible study, that Abraham gave his tithes to Melchizedek. Later in history, we see the nation of Israel and the tribe of Levi, who was designated at that time to receive the tithe. Let's look at Numbers chapter 18, verse 21. In Numbers 18, verse 21, it says, "Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. The tribe of Levi received the first tithe because they had no other inheritance, and God gave the tithe to them because they were the ones who performed all the work. They were the ones who took care of the sacrifices and the offerings. Now the New Testament ministry has been commissioned to preach the gospel. And that, of course, has a cost involved. Doing the work does not come without cost. And the tithe is the means by which God provides the funding. I think we all understand that. We all know that. That's nothing new. But this is the first tithe. This is the first tenth of our increase. God also commands a second tithe, which is to be used for keeping his festivals. And for that, we'll turn to Deuteronomy 14. In Deuteronomy 14, I'll read verses 22 and 23. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22 says, "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil, of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always." This tithe is obviously separate from the first tithe. Because this tithe, you see, the tithe payer is instructed to consume the tithe himself. In the place where God chooses to place his name, he says, "You shall eat before the Lord your God." That tithe is to be consumed by the tithe payer. The first tithe is never consumed by the tithe payer. This is obviously a second tithe, a different tithe. It is what we call the festival tithe. The festival tithe is to be eaten before the Lord your God. When we come before him to worship him at the place where he has chosen to place his name, that is where this tithe is consumed. The purpose is that we learn to fear God always. Now, notice that it is to be eaten. It says the tithe is to be eaten where God's name is placed. In Israel's time, there was one specific place. There was one location for the feast. There was one place where the holy days were observed. Now today we have many different locations where the Feast of Tabernacles is held. Many different places around the globe. Many choices we have where we want to attend. We're not restricted to just one place, but we can go wherever we choose. So we have different places where God has placed his name. No matter where we go, and I don't care if it's in your backyard or if it's across the world, it's going to cost you something to be at the feast and to observe it as God intended. And for that reason, because there is an expense involved, he instituted this festival tithe. You see, because it was important to him that everyone be able to attend. It is that important to him. He doesn't want anyone to have to miss out. So he's made it possible for everyone to be able to, no matter what their financial status is. His plan would guarantee that everyone could attend. Now, God knew that long-distance travel might be involved. And certainly for some of you, I know some of you are going to Alaska this year. Wow, that's a trip. That's a long way to go. God provided for long-distance travel. Israel, being an agrarian society like they were, did not have tithes that consisted of paper money or coins. They had sheep, they had oxen, they had their herds and flocks and their grain and their wine and their oil. That was their tithe. They tithed literally a tenth of the things that they produced. And they carried those things to the feast with them. But if there was a long distance involved, dragging all these things along to the feast could be a real hardship. And so God made a provision for that as well, as we keep reading in verse 24. It says, "But if the journey is too long for you, so that you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses." So in the case where they had a lot of blessing and a lot of tithe and a long way to go, God said, liquidate your tithe. Turn it into cash. Turn it into money. Well, today we work for employers who do not pay us in grain or oil or flocks or herds. We work for employers who pay us in cash. Most of us anyway. Our increase, our income is usually already liquid when we earn it. And so we don't have to turn it into cash. But the principle of using the money for festival expenses still holds. Now, the festival tithe is primarily used for Feast of Tabernacles expenses. A portion of it can be used for the other holy days as well. There's seven holy days through the year. God has designated seven different festivals. And we have the option of using some of that tithe to observe those festivals. But we don't want to use it all up in the spring. We certainly don't want to run ourselves short of our tithe come feast time. So the primary purpose is for the feast. That's the biggest expense. That's the festival that lasts the longest. So that's where most of our tithe will go. But we're told to use that cash for whatever our heart desires. For whatever you want. You know? Anything you see that you want while you're at the feast. That's part of the rejoicing. That's part of the enjoyment of going to the feast. Because we're able to do this. And we're told to use it for whatever our heart desires. And the purpose is to help us to rejoice, to celebrate, to be festive. That's what God wants us to do, to be festive at this time. He wants us to be happy and rejoicing before him. Without the festival tithe, that rejoicing would be restricted. We would be restricted on how much rejoicing we could do if we didn't have the tithe. You know, it's easy to rejoice when we have abundance. Having abundance removes all restrictions, doesn't it? If you have an abundant amount of tithe, you can pretty much do whatever you please, whatever your heart desires. Within limits, of course. There are certain limits, but I'll show you that as we go along. It is God's tithing law that gives us the freedom to be able to rejoice before him, to be able to go to the feast and really have a wonderful time. That's what it's all about. That's what he wants us to do. Even though we use the tithe for our enjoyment, even though we use it so that we can rejoice in it, there's one thing we have to remember about this tithe. It is holy. This tithe is still holy. God's holy tithe is given over to us. The tithe belongs to God. And that includes the festival tithe. It belongs to him. But we are the ones responsible for it. It is up to us to use it in a right way. All tithes are holy. They are set aside for a godly purpose. We have to understand that. We can't ever forget this tithe, even though it's what we take to the feast with us and what we use for our own enjoyment and our own pleasure, is still holy. The tithe is holy to God. It's up to us to make sure it's used for the right purpose. It's up to us to be sure that we don't use it in an improper way. You know, we present the tithe to God in accordance with the command. God then turns it back over to us when we go to keep His feasts. We have to understand that the festival tithe is not more casual than the first tithe. Now, some people might think, well, I paid my first tithe and I might be able to save something for the feast, but might not be a whole tithe, but well, at least I'm paying the first tithe. It's not more casual. It is just as important. It is just as commanded. It is just as holy and belongs to God just as much as the first tithe. Notice Malachi chapter 3, verse 8. Malachi 3, verse 8. It says, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. For you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. These tithes, and it says tithes, plural, the tithes are considered stolen from God if we do not save them, if we do not set them aside. The festival tithe belongs to God just as much as the first tithe belongs to God. And faithfulness in the festival tithe is not less important than faithfulness in the first tithe. It is just as much a part of God's law as the first tithe. To withhold either tithe, either the first tithe or the festival tithe, is considered robbing God, stealing from Him. I know in the past there have been some people who have gone to the feasts without any festival tithe. They just take their credit cards and they rack up some debt on their credit cards. People have done that before. I'll worry about it later, they say. That's not God's way. It's not the way He designed it. I've known people who have just decided that they'll take their last paycheck that they get before the feast, and that's what they'll go to the feast with. It's not God's way. That's stealing from God. The tithe is holy before Him. If you resort to one of these other methods, using a credit card to rack up some debt to attend the feast, or just taking your last paycheck and not worrying about the bills that check was supposed to cover until you get home, well, that's not how God ordained it. And that's not going to be blessed. And you're not going to be able to rejoice the way that God wants you to. Because every time you swipe that credit card, you're going to be thinking, well, that's just a little bit deeper in debt. Every time you use a little bit of that last paycheck that you got that was the only thing that you were able to bring with you, you're going to be thinking, well, there goes my electric bill for this month. Or there goes the car payment. And you're going to have these things weighing on your mind and you're not going to be able to rejoice. God didn't design it to be that way. And it's not going to be blessed if that's the way you do it. To keep the holy days and to rejoice before God, as I said, is not without significant cost. And our travel and our lodging to the feast is an expense that can be a considerably high amount. And it's an expense that we usually don't have the rest of the year. Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23, verse 42. Leviticus 23, verse 42 says, "You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." The purpose of the Feast of Tabernacles, or I should say one of the things that set that apart from the other holy days, was that Israel was to dwell in booths. What is a booth? What are we talking about? A phone booth? A booth at the diner? We use that word for a lot of different things. The Hebrew word here is sukkah, which is also translated in other places, tabernacles. The sukkah is a tabernacle. It is a temporary dwelling. That's what a sukkah is. That's what a booth is. That's what a tabernacle is. The tabernacle is where you stay during the feast. Now, I've been to the feast before up in the Poconos, and people always talked about going down to the tabernacle building. Maybe you've heard that expression before. Talking about the meeting place where the feast was held. That's not the tabernacle. That's not the booth. That's not the sukkah. The tabernacle is not the meeting place where feast services are held. It is literally the place where you are staying, the temporary dwelling in which you reside during the feast. God wants you to live in a temporary place during the feast. Even if you live near the feast site, you need a tabernacle. You need a sukkah. If the feast is right down the road from where you live, you might be tempted to say, I'll just commute from home every day. I won't have to pay for a hotel room. That's not the idea. The idea is to live in a temporary dwelling. To commute from home defeats the purpose of the feast. It defeats the purpose of why you are there. What is the purpose? Why are you there? Why do you go to the Feast of Tabernacles? Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13. I'm going to show you why. In Hebrews chapter 11, this is the chapter that lists all of the people who were faithful. All of the people throughout biblical history who were faithful to God. And in Hebrews 11, verse 13, it says, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland." We are pilgrims seeking a homeland. That homeland is God's kingdom. That's our goal. That's what we look forward to. And going to the feast and staying in a temporary dwelling reminds us that this world is our temporary home. This isn't it. This isn't what we're living for. We're seeking a homeland. Just like these faithful people listed in Hebrews 11, we're seeking a homeland. We go to the feast and stay in a temporary dwelling, picturing the fact that we are currently in a temporary place, seeking something greater, seeking our homeland. Now, when we come to the feast with ample festival tithe, it provides us with a lot of opportunities. Opportunities for having some fine meals, maybe doing a little shopping, going to the mall, getting a new pair of shoes, whatever it is that you want. Whatever you see while you're at the feast that you would like to have. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 14 again, and we'll pick up where we left off. After God said in verse 25 to exchange it for money, in Deuteronomy 14:26, he says, "And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires. For oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household." The tithe is given to us to use for whatever we desire. The tithe belongs to God. He turns it over to us to use as we desire to use it during His feast. Notice that this verse gives two stipulations for spending the tithe. Two stipulations are given here. It says, "You shall eat there before the Lord your God." So it tells us where to consume this tithe, where to spend the money. We're to eat there before God. In other words, where He places His name, as it said in verse 25. The second stipulation is, "And you shall rejoice, you and your household." You are commanded to use it in the place where God placed His name, and you are commanded to use it for the purpose of rejoicing before Him. So God gives us this tithe. He turns it over to us so that we can rejoice. When it says eating before God, when it says you shall eat it there before God, that implies more than just purchasing food. We don't just go to the feast and we spend all of our festival tithe on food. That's not what it means. The word eat is the Hebrew word akel. And sometimes the word akel is translated consume. We consume the tithe. We use it up for whatever it is that we see fit to spend it on. God gives us this tithe to consume as we see fit. He turns it over to us. And it is to be consumed where His name is placed. Specifically, at the feast, at whatever feast site we attend. He gives this to us so we can come and rejoice before Him. Now the tithe should therefore be used in a way that helps us rejoice. We don't come to the feast to use the tithe for things that aren't helping us rejoice at the feast. We use it for anything that would enhance our feast. That's the purpose. That's how we rejoice before God. We use that tithe for that which will enhance our feast, which will make our feast better, which will help us to have a good time and rejoice before God. That's the purpose of this tithe. Anything that would enhance your feast. Things that are unrelated to the feast would not qualify. Anything that is not enhancing your feast doesn't fit the second stipulation, to rejoice, you and your household. If it's not helping you to rejoice at the feast, it's not a legitimate festival expense. Let me give you some examples of appropriate festival tithe expenses. I think we all probably know this, but I'll go over it for those of you who aren't aware. Naturally, travel and housing and meal expenses at the feast. Getting to the feast certainly is an expense sometimes, especially if you're going to Alaska. I know it's not cheap flying there. Housing. You need a place to stay. You need to rent a temporary facility. Meal expenses. You do need to eat while you're there. This is the main part of your expenses. We wrapped up in these three. And I want to stress something here. Extravagance at the feast It's perfectly okay. Extravagance is good within your particular personal budget, of course. In other words, it's okay to stay at the finest place you can afford. It's okay to do that. It's fine to eat out at nice restaurants, restaurants that maybe you otherwise can't afford. Sometimes you might have a restaurant that you especially like, but you know it's too costly. At the feast, you can do it. At the feast, you've got the money to do that. So do it. Extravagance is okay. I know that we especially like Ruth Chris Steakhouse. If you've ever been there, you're not coming out, if there's two of you, you're not coming out for less than $100. Consequently, I don't go there very often. Usually once a year. And I do it at the feast. Because I can. Because I can do it then. Can't afford it the rest of the year. The command to rejoice also mentions wine or strong drink. Strong drink is the Hebrew word sheker. That means an intoxicating liquor. What? We can go buy liquor at the feast? Is that what the Bible is telling us? Well, let's slow down just a minute. Used responsibly, sheker can be used to rejoice. Used responsibly. That's the key words here. Okay? The feast. Let's look at this word feast here. Let's analyze feast. The Hebrew word is kagag. And that word means to hold a festival or to dance. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 30. I'd like to show you something here. In 1 Samuel 30, verse 16. And when he had brought them down, there they were, spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing, because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. We see here in this verse there is a real party atmosphere going on. There was eating, there was drinking, and there was dancing. And again, we see that word kagag used here. When it says there was drinking, I don't think it was Country Time Lemonade. I don't think it was bottled water. I think they were partying. They were drinking strong drink. Not necessarily becoming intoxicated, but if you use it responsibly, remember, the festival tithe is God's tithe. You give it to Him, He turns it over to you to use as you see fit. Make sure that you use it responsibly. Make sure that you use it in such a way that will not dishonor Him. Strong drink is okay, but use it responsibly. It's important. I need to emphasize that. So what we see here in 1 Samuel 30 was a celebration. The same type of activity that we partake in when we go to the feast. It is a celebration. It is something that we come together to celebrate, to rejoice before God. We have something to rejoice about. What is the feast picture? The kingdom of God. What more could we possibly have to rejoice about than knowing that God's kingdom is coming? There are entertainment opportunities abounding while we're at the feast. Many things that we can do. You take the kids to an amusement park. You can do all kinds of different things while you're at the feast. If you're going to the feast in Ocean City this year, it just so happens that there's going to be a concert. The weekend that we're there at the feast is the same weekend as Sunfest in Ocean City. And Sunfest always means a lot of activities going on and concerts. And this year the Beach Boys are performing. If that's what you enjoy, go for it. Go to the concert if you can get tickets. You probably can't now. It's probably too late. But if you see something at the feast, some kind of entertainment, go enjoy it. That's what it's for. Anything that you enjoy, if it enhances your feast, and that's the key. Does it enhance the feast? Does it make it more enjoyable? More of a celebration? You might want to take a side trip on your way to the feast or on the way home from the feast. A couple of years ago, we went to Gatlinburg. On the way through North Carolina, we stopped off at Asheville. And we took a tour of the Biltmore Estate. If you ever get a chance to do that, I'd recommend that. That's awesome. But anything that you want to do on the way to the feast, on the way home, perfectly okay. If it's enhancing the trip. It's enhancing your feast. Now, are you going to Ocean City for the feast? I would not recommend you take a side trip to the Grand Canyon. You know, we're not talking about out-of-the-way places here. We're talking about something on the way to the feast, something that's not going to add considerable expense and take all of your festival tithe away from you in the side trip so that it's gone before you get there. You don't want to spend it all on the trip. The feast is a time to rejoice. It's a time to enjoy one another's fellowship, and it's also a time to plan family activities together. So family activities are certainly something that we would want to consider doing. And that takes some of our festival tithe as well. Certainly an appropriate use for it. We rejoice together before God as a family in so doing. You might say, well, when I get to the feast, I want to buy some new clothing. Well, if it's something that you're going to use at the feast, well, that should be fine. You're going to Ocean City and you want to get it and go on the beach. You need a new bathing suit or you need some new sandals or something when you get there. You don't have any. Stop by and pick some up. That's fine. Do you need a new suit to wear to church? Do you need a new dress? Maybe some of the ladies would like to have a new piece of jewelry to wear at the feast. Might make your feast a little better. Might make your feast more enjoyable if you have something special, something new. And that's perfectly fine. That's a perfectly legitimate way to enjoy and rejoice in the feast. It isn't, however, the time to go out and restock your whole wardrobe. To throw all of your old stuff out and get all new stuff. That's not the purpose. That's not doing it to enhance the feast. What about buying gifts for people? Buying gifts is certainly a suitable way to use the tithe, especially if it's for your children who are at the feast with you. Something like that. Makes it special for them. It enhances their feasts when they receive something special from their parents. Getting gifts for some of the family members back home, maybe some who aren't in the church. Well, that may or may not be appropriate. You know, it doesn't... Nothing totally against it, but it might not be the thing to do to go to the store just to buy gifts for everybody in your family just because they're in your family. Oh, we got something for this one. Now we got to get something for that one, and we got to get something for this one over here. And pretty soon you've got a long list of people you have to buy for, and it's pretty much because you feel like you have to do it because you did it for one, you have to do it for the other. You know, we don't want to make it a trip where we just buy gifts for everybody. That's not the intent, but certainly buying a gift here and there for someone is fine. You know, there's this pagan holiday that occurs in December. I forget the name of it now. Some of you might remember what it is. A lot of that goes on there, a lot of gift giving. We're not trying to imitate that. We're not trying to duplicate that in any way. That's not the purpose of the feast. Remember, it's whatever enhances your feast. That's the key. Anything that you desire that helps you enjoy the feast is an appropriate use of the festival tithe. Examples of inappropriate use of the festival tithe. Remember that the tithe is holy. Remember that it still belongs to God, and He is turning it over to you for your use in order that you might rejoice before Him. we must take care not to abuse the tithe that he turns over to us. Using the tithe in an unholy manner is contrary to his purpose. I've already covered this a little bit, but I'm going to say it again. Too much strong drink is never acceptable. Too much strong drink is never acceptable. Proverbs 20, verse 1. Probably only one of many proverbs I could turn to on this subject, but I'll just turn to this one. In Proverbs 20, verse 1, it says, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." And I have to say, if you partake of too much strong drink at the feast, it is not a wise use of the tithe, which is holy. You have to remember that when we come to the feast, we are setting an example. We have a whole community there that probably doesn't know anything about the feast or about the church or about God's way of life or about the Bible even. They see us come into town, and we're an example before them. We have to make sure that we're setting the right kind of example. In 1 Timothy 4, verse 12, we see an admonition here from Paul to Timothy. And I realize that he was saying this to one man regarding his ministry, but I think it applies to us as well. I think it's wise for us to look at it. 1 Timothy 4, verse 12. He said, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." He was telling Timothy to be a good example to the congregation, to the members. That applies to us as well. We should be a good example to the people that see us when we come into town. And we take over their facilities for over a week. We need to set the right example. Whatever your heart desires is still within the boundaries of God's law. When it says we use the tithe for whatever your heart desires, that doesn't include things that are contrary to Christian behavior. That would be inappropriate. We went to the Bahamas several years ago for the feast. We stayed in a resort that had two hotels, about four or five restaurants, a couple of swimming pools, a really, really nice beach, a convention center that we used for the feast, and a casino. I was in most of the buildings there. Never went in the casino. Didn't have any desire to go there. Gambling, casinos, things like that, if you're at the feast, that would be considered inappropriate entertainment. You know, you don't want to be going in there and gambling away the tithe that is holy to God. There are limitations when we say whatever your heart desires. Let's not think that it means anything, because things that would be considered inappropriate, things that would be not right to do for a Christian at any time, certainly we don't want to use God's holy tithe for that. The tithe is God's, and it is holy. It belongs to Him. Let's use it in the right way. Let's glorify God in our use of it. That's one of the most important things we have to remember as far as the proper use of the festival tithe. Glorify God in your use of it. The feast is not just a time to buy things that you otherwise can't afford. The feast is not the time to, well, you go to the feast site, you drive to a car dealer, and you see this car that you like, and oh, you've got all this festival tithe in your wallet, so you can afford a nice big down payment on this car. That's not the idea. That's not the purpose. It's not the time to be putting a down payment on the car or buying new appliances for the home or getting new furniture or landscaping for the home. You know, those things aren't enhancing your feast. Those things enhance your life when you get back home. It's not the time for things like that. These aren't things that you need to have a good feast. The key again, does it enhance the feast for my family and me? That's what tells us whether it's appropriate, an appropriate use or not. There's one other use of the festival tithe I haven't mentioned yet. And we're told not to forget it. Now, back in the Levitical priesthood, some of the tithe was to go to the Levites so they could rejoice. Some of the festival tithe, not the first tithe now, but some of the festival tithe. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 14 once again. We've read already from 22 down to 26. Let's now read verse 27. In talking about, in verse 26, it was talking about spending the money for whatever your heart desires. In verse 27, it says, "You shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you." The Levites were provided for because they had no inheritance. Of course, today we understand that the Levitical priesthood is no more. That has long since gone away. But we do still have some among us who have no increase, just like the Levites had no inheritance. We have people today who have no increase. There are always some who cannot afford to go to the feast because they have nothing to tithe on. They may be unemployed. They may be underemployed. They may be on a fixed income, on Social Security. And they have no income, they have no increase on which to set aside the festival tithe. You know, God looks out for them as well. He makes a way for them to attend the feast just as much as for the rest of us. And it's our Christian duty to help those who are in need. James chapter 1 verse 27. James 1 verse 27. It says, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." I'd like to focus in on this word, visit. Because I think if we casually read that, and we think, oh, we should be dropping in on people and spending time with them and talking to them. Visit is from the Greek word episkeptomai, which means to look after, to inspect, to examine, and to do these things in order to help or benefit, to care for or to provide for. You see, this word visit involves more than just a casual dropping in on someone and having tea with them. Visiting involves a lot more. It involves someone attending to their needs. When we visit someone in their affliction, it means we recognize or we examine their need and we help them fill it. If there is a need, there is a duty, a Christian duty, to fill that need. And these needs often include financing the feast, financing someone's feast. Many of us have way more festival tithe than we can use. Some of us have just what we need. Some of us have a little bit less than what we would like to have. But there are some who have way more than what they need. It is our duty to support those among us who have little. It's our duty to help out. We're all one body. We're all part of the same team. And that tithe is holy. That tithe is intended so that God's church can keep his festivals. That means his church collectively, as a whole. And if we see a need that we are able to fill, if we are able to help out, then we need to be doing that. That is another important use of your festival time. You know, planning for the feast doesn't begin the week before Feast of Trumpets. Our feast plans typically begin right after the previous feast. When do you start putting aside that festival tithe? As soon as you get home from the feast. As soon as you start with increase for the next year. That's when your planning begins. God expects us to plan for it ahead of time. It was in January of this year that I was contacted and told that Ocean City was being selected as a possible site. And we went down there and we took a look at it. Charles Malir came into town and he and I went down there and we looked at the site. The planning was underway. He had already looked at another site in Massachusetts. And so we selected a site in Ocean City and the site in Massachusetts, and the decision was made between the two. It was presented to the Council of Elders and Ocean City was selected over Massachusetts. The planning begins way in advance. It's a year-long thing. In fact, when we set up for a feast site, when we go to an establishment and say, we want to use your facility for the feast, we not only look at the feast this year, we look at the feast next year and the year after. Are your dates available in future years? That's one of the considerations. We try to find a place that we'll be able to use year after year. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes we can't return to a place. But that's one of the considerations. Are you available not only this year, but next year? And we give them the dates. Planning ahead, and that's what God expects us to do. He expects us individually to plan ahead. He doesn't expect us to wait to get ready financially. You know, we don't start looking around for a way to afford the trip to the feast on the Day of Atonement. That would be senseless. You know, you've got just a few days and you have to leave. We don't wait. We start planning ahead way in advance. And God doesn't want us to go into debt to keep the feast either. You know, his plan is for everyone to be able to attend to keep his holy days. That plan enables us to do so without any financial concerns because he has instituted the tithing laws that are just as important as the holy days themselves. This plan of tithing is as much a part of God's law as keeping the Sabbath and the holy days. It is that important. Let's be thankful for this financial tool that God has given us. He's given us a way that we can keep these days as he prescribed, that we can rejoice before him, that we can have the wonderful time that he wants us to have, that we can honor him and glorify him in what he has given us and what he has shared with us. So let's glorify God by a right use of the holy tithe that he has turned over to us. He gives it to us to use it as we see fit. And then he watches us to see how we will use his holy tithe. He gives us this law, just like all the rest of his laws, for our benefit. It assures us a feast of rejoicing and of happiness and of closeness to him. The rejoicing is not just for our family. The rejoicing is for the entire church, for his entire body. So let's remember the holiness of this tithe. Remember how God wants us to use it, what he wants us to use it for, what he doesn't want us to use it for. And let's not treat it casually, but let's always remember that the festival tithe is holy.